this short, so my two songs was a lie. But thank you so much for tuning in to KBOL 90.7 FM Portland. Tune in next month, fourth Wednesday, for a new episode. What the theme is, it's a secret. So keep in touch, okay?
This is Granny D. I'm talking from KBOO, Portland. I come from Dublin, New Hampshire, and I go across the country working for public funding at the state level. And I often hear about KBOO on my email. It is often mentioned as one of the most progressive and daring stations that we have in this country. They are not afraid to tell you the truth. So tune in to KBOO Portland and get the real word.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communication Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. KBOO's Board of Directors meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from the Bureau of Labor and Industry's Child Care for Construction, a program dedicated to helping working families in the trades in partnership with Business Oregon. More info is available at oregon.gov/BOLI/apprenticeship under the link Financial Assistance for Registered Apprentices.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 0, 3.
Never been done before.
We're talking about a subject.
To bring you to the light.
Farewell to you, people.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. And we want to talk to you about a very important topic. It is dealing with the issue of undocumented folks are being targeted. We're looking at concerns around folks who are being labeled a dissenter. You know, the code word for that is Antifa. And just in general, we should know what our rights individually and collectively are. I'm going to kind of frame this a little bit in the sense that we now have a journalist, Don Lemon, who many of you might have been familiar with because of his work at CNN. He's now an independent journalist. They're talking about bringing charges on him because on his podcast or broadcast, he suggested that people arm themselves, that they go out and get guns. And now they're saying that was a threat to federal law enforcement and that carries a penalty of 5 years. So we're at some very steep crossroads and things are changing daily. To help us wade through a lot of this, I want to bring two guests onto the show. Joining us are two guests who can help us wade through this. One is Eric Leanson. He is retired, but was a business and social responsibility consultant in Berkeley. And we also have Marisa Almore Menendez, who is a UC Berkeley graduate specializing in international migration and global poverty and practice. She's been with EBCS since 2022 And we're glad to have both of you here on the show. So I started off by painting a picture of just the complexities around knowing your rights with everything that is in flux. If I added one more caveat to it, just people talking about, you know, knowing your rights has caught the has had some people caught up in the crosshairs of what's going on. We know that there were several people in Southern Cali who were arrested for identifying who were behind the mask, saying those ICE agents is Mr. Jones and Mr. Smith, and they live here. So they're in violation. Having a discussion like this in some people's eyes is somehow wrong because it's seen as being subversive. So I want to welcome you all to the show, and I don't know where we would start, but let's start with you, Eric. How do you see the lay of the land as we talk?
I see it as, from in one perspective, as very dark, in the sense that for the reasons you just said, we're basically losing our constitutional rights. There are many things going on which I never thought I would see during my lifetime. And the Congress does not seem to be speaking up or trying to control, nor are the courts at the highest level, the Supreme Court, really reigning in Trump. On the other hand, on the brighter side, we see there's been a terrific reaction against this by the mobilization literally of millions of people in support of their rights, but also in support of their neighbors' rights, of the immigrants who are here, who are really being unfairly targeted as the first round of victims.
Before I bring in Marisa, let me ask you this. You mentioned about Congress and you mentioned about the courts. And to a certain degree, there's a certain expectation and maybe normalcy. Like, if only we could just go to Congress and they do the right thing, and we go to the courts and they do the right thing. Some people look at it and say they're not going to do the right thing, that the rules are out the window, and this is just window dressing, that what you're looking at is unapologetic power grab, a form of war, if you will. So how do we kind of reconcile ourselves with that reality? Or do you feel that there can be some sort of semblance of, you know, people following the rules?
I think we're beyond that, the normal stage of things. I still have hope that there can be some reaction from the courts and the Congress that will set some guardrails. But I wouldn't bet the farm on it, because people just are totally intimidated by this president. I saw a great poster at the demonstration on Saturday, No Kings, that said, the price of eggs is so high because all the chickens are in Congress. And I think that's really what it's all about, that we're seeing the use of force, mafia-type force, at a level that has been non-existent in this country before. And no one is that has power is standing in his way. So it's up to us, you know, to mobilize and say, no, we just aren't going to put up with it.
Marisa, welcome to the show. How are you seeing things?
Well,
what's
you.
The lay of the land for you?
Well, you know, Eric knows this. We collaborate, the East Bay Sanctuary collaborates very closely with the Friends of La Peña Immigration Rights Committee. And I come from Spain, so I know dictatorship. And early in January, I saw what was going on, and I was really concerned. So when I started doing Know Your Rights presentations for, you know, allies so that they could help the immigrant community, I said, you know, this is for immigrants, but everybody, you know, pretty soon we're going to need this ourselves. And it's happened much faster than we expected. So, yes, I agree with Eric and everything he said. And I only have a little bit of hope in the fact that the response is being very good. Like he says, people are responding, and we only need a 3.5% of the population to get up and do something to be able to make a difference. So we're halfway there. I think it might happen.
You mentioned being from Spain and knowing dictatorship. One of the challenges we have here in this country is most people don't know what is happening in other parts of the world. And, exactly. You know, you probably know that when you travel, probably folks in Spain know more about our politics in the ins and outs, as well as the politics of the neighbors. You know, what's going on in France and Italy and, you know, in various other countries. And here, you know, you're hard pressed to find people who even know what's going on down the street. So with that being said, you said a dictatorship in Spain. What do you mean by that, and how have people been able to negotiate with that?
Well, we had a dictatorship right before World War II. We had a civil war, lasted 3 years. We were used as testing grounds for Nazis and communists, and we ended up with 40 years of dictatorship, the Franco dictatorship. And so we've all grown up hearing those stories and knowing what the situation was and what it means to people, you know, in their everyday life, knowing that you have to whisper saying certain things because there will start to be a surveillance in a high level. And so you don't know who's listening to you, who's going to report you. And, you know, people end up being very afraid because in the end, this is a form of bullying, right? And so that's why it's so important that we stop them as soon as possible, because if they implant their rule, it will be very hard to change things.
If I may add to that, I mean, what Marissa says really resonates strongly. And it's not a coincidence also that we who have been associated with La Peña for a long time have really stood up on this, because La Peña, as you may know, came as a result of the military dictatorship in Chile. And many refugees came to ex-political prisoners came to Berkeley from Chile and became an integral part of La Peña. So the Spanish experience, the Chilean experience, you know, they always keep saying it can't happen here. Well, guess what? It's happening here.
There are many people that are listening that would say, Eric, Marissa, it's been here for Black folks in the South.
Definitely.
This has been reality, to the point that people say, what else is new? Water is wet. And I don't mean to say that to be trite, but really that's how folks have felt. They have no political power. They've come from a situation where the courts were against them, the entire state apparatus, even now. Right, we don't have to go back to the civil rights movement. Look what's going on in places like Jackson. Look what's going on in Florida. And I bring this up because we don't seem to have reconciled the history that is here. We haven't even talked about what happens with indigenous folks, but we can put that in the bucket as well. Right. To understand what has happened to a large swath of this population, along with the realities that you described in Chile and in Spain and what seems to be on our doorstep. One of the results of that is that you had a large number of people go, why should I go to a No Kings march? You know, been marching, you know, been seeing this. Others are looking and saying, there's a call for civility when we're at war. Why are we calling for civility when they're at war? So there seems to be some distance in terms of what the live realities have been for a large part of this population and what many people are up in arms about right now. So how do we kind of bridge that gap, or do we just, you know, work in the area that we know best and may the chips fall where they do?
That's a... Go ahead, Marissa.
No, I was going to say, Eric, you go first.
Okay, that's a very, very good question. And I think what we need to do is always understand that reality. I mean, that's got to be there. And I think for many people, it is there. I hearken back to the 60s when I think there was a similar thing to a lesser extent going on of repression. Certainly, the Black community felt it the strongest, the absolute, you know, brutal annihilation of the Black Panthers being a very clear example. But there was a lot of oppression of civil rights, of other folks, civil liberties that hadn't experienced before. So I think we can't change what has happened in the past, but I think we can move forward in a very conscientious way in which we understand the racist nature of this country and who's really on the front lines. But at the same time, as the rest of us are getting pushed in ways that we're not familiar with, that we come together and struggle in a way that works for everybody. I think that's the only thing we can do.
Go ahead,
yeah. Lisa. Yeah, I think actually, in a way, it's like a next step. So before the bulk of the repression and the like Eric said, the annihilation of the Black Panthers, it was one big group, right? Black people. But now it's targeted towards immigrants, towards people in the left. So I think it's just kind of an increased version of what's been happening before. So it's just taking a larger swath of the population. And the difference is that it's very openly political. So people on the left are being targeted too. So as you can see, there are many more groups involved, many more groups targeted. I think it's a larger, event. And that's what's scary and problematic. That it's not, just sheer racism and singling out one group and oppressing one group. Is basically an ideological battle, and I think there's going to be political repression.
I would add to that a slightly different take, basically in agreement, but I think there is a tremendous amount of racism involved. I mean, the attacks against the immigrants today are racist. I mean, it's not,
oh, definitely
not a coincidence of who they're going after. And I think it's very illustrative of the change of attitudes and solidarity that millions and millions of people are coming out very strongly, to support the immigrant population, saying we want these people to be part of our nation. They are part of our nation, period. And we're going to defend them. And I mean, in some ways, as maybe a parallel with support for the civil rights movement, but I think it's much tighter, more tightly woven in a broader stretch of the population in terms of being supportive of these people's plights.
Yes.
I think one of the things that as you're talking, I'm just thinking that my understanding of the 60s and 70s was that, COINTELPRO, which was an oppressive tool, was used against a variety of folks. The anti-war movement caught it, the war on drugs with Nixon targeted folks that he labeled HIFPE. The parallel would be this president, calling people Antifa, right? And both are being used as an excuse to disrupt, surveil, and repress groups of people who have a particular political leaning. But every other group, ranging from the Chicano movement on down, Puerto Rican nationalists, et cetera, all caught the ire, the ire of J. Edgar Hoover and the government. And so that's how I understand the history. Today, it's a little interesting because we have a lot of folks that seem to be collaborators with what is going on. Sometimes they look like us. There are folks that are sitting here that have brown skin that are saying, I want ICE to come. Some of them have been paid. Some of them might be compromised. Some of them really believe that. We've seen a lot of brown folks, You know, I mean, just the other day, you know, right here when they did the thing at the San Jose Sharks where the Sharks, you know, praised ICE and people were outraged. But then, you know, maybe the cameras and the news agency went and found some brown folks, but they were like, well, they shouldn't have done it there, but I support ICE. And you're like, wow, you know, so you have these contradictions. And then even locally, we have folks that are very comfortable with draconian measures if it suits their immediate political type of thing. You know, folks that want to shut down discussions, whether it's around how the homeless are treated, how we deal with police, how we deal with ethnic studies and a whole nine, you know, how we deal with the question of war. So we have folks that have been very comfortable, even though they are on the left, with shutting down. Even with the No Kings March, I'm watching Code Pink be uninvited. And at the one in Washington, D.C., because they had a pro-Palestinian thing. So, again, there are these nuances and complications. Does one use the tool of repression when it's convenient, or is this something that we're talking about completely eliminating any of those things and moving forward in the ideals that you all expressed?
Well, I think... in general, people who truly are left stand for, you know, the right things, right? In general, it has to do with your beliefs and your moral values. And so I was a little shocked when you talked about Code Pink being not invited to the No Kings March because they were carrying pro-Palestinian signs. Is that what happened?
Yeah, you see it on the video, you know, like they're told they're not welcome here. And I mean, to me, that's kind of shocking. But,
yeah,
you know, but
we
do have folks on the left who identify on the left where that's a line that we can't cross, you know?
That I think those are not, I'm not going to say isolated cases, but I would say there's people that are still contending, you know, that the being pro-Palestinian is being pro-Hamas. But I think in the left, that is the minority, right? And it's usually people who are of Jewish faith and have been brought up, you know, being told that Israel is you know, is something good. And even a lot of evangelists that are not even Jewish have been brought up, you know, protecting Israel. I think it depends on the person, right? But I was a little shocked when you said that happened. I'm hoping that that's an isolated incident. Perhaps it had to do with the fact that the pro-Palestinian movement, you know, it's a bit younger and it might not be as nonviolent, let's say, and there was a concern there. I don't know. What do you think, Eric?
Well, I don't want to speculate on that particular
right.
because I don't know the details.
Right.
But, you know, I think on the left, we've always had issues because we think and people have different thoughts and they agree and disagree. And unfortunately, we disagree all too often. But I think what's essential is how do you build a movement and how do you gain power? And in order to gain power, you have to have strength in numbers. And I think inevitably there's going to be some conflict over issues, and that's healthy. I'm not suggesting the incident in Washington is healthy, but you know there needs to be discussion and debate. And I think the goal is a movement towards better understanding, better education, and more unity on basic human values, which support the rights of people everywhere. And exactly. I think as we build this movement, I mean, we're talking now, they said there were 7 million people in the streets on the weekend. Well, yeah, there's a huge variety of opinion among those 7 million people as to what it is. But we need to be clear that we need to be increasing the numbers and at the same time, really educating people on what are basic rights and how we can support people in struggle, ourselves being people in struggle as our rights are being you know, compromised all the time. And yeah, I don't think we live in an ideal world. So I think we've got to push forward and be clear and be critical of incidents that such as D&D was talking about. You know, that can't pass, but it takes time. It doesn't happen magically.
You know, Eric Leeson, that's his voice, and we also have Marissa Almore with us as well. I bring up that incident, you know, because you can find a through way to how that becomes a political ideology that, you know, laws and things like that get passed, right? So we have a governor that just veto reparations. We have, you know, folks like Scott Wiener leading the charge to get rid of ethnic studies, things like that, that are important to people on the left. And one could just sum it up and say, well, that becomes a neoliberal, that becomes the established Democratic Party type of agenda, et cetera, et cetera. And when we have this type of repression that we're talking about, mass surveillance, people being swooped up and taken away without their rights being read and people not knowing, and we have this clamor about civil war, we're talking about some very dangerous things. And it's a thin line between wanting to make sure that those things are done with once and for all versus them being replaced with somebody who just does it a little bit nicer, has a nicer smile, you know, says the right thing. You know, Obama was just as draconian with his immigration policy as this current totally. President, but gosh, if I say something about Obama, I've ruined everybody's day because he was a nice guy and he smiled and he represented a certain type of ideal. He just did it nicer. You know, it's a smooth pimp versus a guerrilla pimp. You know, one is smacking you and the other one is seducing you, but you're still a prisoner at the end of the day. And how do we really move forward in a way that we don't have any of this type of repression, even if it, I don't see it being any different if one is smiling versus one who's just outright, you know, saying what they're saying.
I think what Eric said is the key, right? That we need education. We need to educate people politically. We need to politicize people and, you know, have all these people that just keep on swinging the vote and saying, okay, this didn't work, I'm going to vote for this other guy, just without any criteria or with the wrong criteria. Mm-hmm. People need to know, you'd be surprised. I've been training people the whole year on Know Your Rights. The amount of people that don't have any idea that we do have constitutional rights. It's gone from people thinking that, you know, if law enforcement says anything, you just have to obey, period. And, you know, it's been very interesting to see. Thank goodness, and thanks to the work that Friends of La Peña Immigrants Rights Committee has done, how many cards have, red cards and yellow cards have distributed, Eric?
About 140,000.
Yeah, 140,000 cards, and we've been doing presentations all over the place. You know, I'm encountering a lot more people that know about their constitutional rights, but still the amount of, you could call them newcomers, people who have been here more recently, or who have lived in the margins of society because of their immigrant status. Those people, there's so many people that think they have no rights whatsoever. And so that's why our work, the work that we've been doing, making sure that, you know, we do have one or two Know Your Rights events a month, you know, it's really, really important. And we've been training people to train others and doing everything we could to increase that knowledge, because those rights are still part of our strength. You know, they do protect us to a certain extent. Yes, right. ICE can detain you, but knowing your rights is what's going to make a difference between detention and deportation, for example. It's been proven that people who have been detained are the people that talk during the encounter, right? Mm. They talk too much. They say too much and they end up detained. And people who get deported are the people that sign papers without a lawyer having advised them. So, you know, teaching people about their constitutional rights is still really, really useful.
Appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Eric, what are some of the basic rights that people kind of don't know about and find themselves being caught up? Like, I was always told, don't talk to the police without a lawyer, right? We've had these trainings at our church, right? They call it the talk. Do not say anything to police without a lawyer, because police are allowed to lie, et cetera, et cetera. Now, they can be nice. They can say, hey, you can go about your day. And the next thing you know, it's like, yeah, me and Eric were hanging out. Oh, Eric is on our list. The next thing you know, you're caught. You're there, right? Because it seemed like an innocent thing, but it winds up being something much, much deeper. So that's kind of been ingrained. Don't say anything at all, right?
Right.
But that is so counterintuitive to what we've been taught. And so that's why I'm framing that. So when we talk about basic rights, and I think Marissa kind of alluded to it, but from what you find, what are a couple that people absolutely need to know and really stick to?
Okay, I think first of all is what you just mentioned, that you remain silent unless there's an attorney. One thing I'd like to add to that is people are not aware of this. And I think particularly in the age of the internet, people have kind of lost a sense of what they need, what they should be talking about, not talking about. Having come of age in the 60s, we assumed that our phone calls were being tapped, our phones were being tapped, and that you were careful about what you said. My God, when you look at the internet and what people post about themselves, it's sort of a whole different world. It's kind of amazing. And that's going to be used for repression, you know, for sure, at some point. You know, you're just opening yourself up to that. So the issue of remaining silent, the issues of searches, you know, the agent should have a search warrant in order to be able to search your possessions. And if they don't, you just don't allow them to do that. They don't have the right to just come and, for no reason, go through what you have to look for some sort of evidence against you. I mean, these are very basic sort of things. And to the extent that people follow them, they provide a certain degree of temporary safety in any case. And as Marissa was saying, it makes a difference what happens in the encounter, in terms of subsequently what information they have to use against you. So it's really important to stay as quiet as possible, not show them things. They don't have the right to come into your house unless they have a search, a judicial search warrant. So one thing that we talk to people about is, if they're in the house, do not open the door, you know, unless they put under the door or show you a judicial warrant. Not an administrative warrant, which ICE issues like candy, but a judicial warrant in which a judge says they have the right to searching your property and your belongings. Marissa, do you want to add?
Well, let me just ask you this, and Marissa, then come in. I hear you 100% on the things that you just said.
Yes.
And again, when those talks have had, we've heard that. But, you know, you got a kid who's 14, 15 years old. He's out there and he's like, I don't want you searching me. And now all of a sudden he's brutalized by a cop or an ICE agent. And then he said that he's accused of resisting and hitting the ICE agent because of, you know, what happens afterwards. We've seen people say you can't come in the house and the door gets busted and then all of a sudden they got charges. You've seen people say, I want to exert my rights. You can't come into, you know, you can't, you know, I don't want to roll down my window. And you've seen the windows busted both by police and ICE, right? For people, when they see ICE, they're like, wow, but that happens all the time with police right here, right? Mm-hmm. And so what is being said and what actually happens, that's very, very different from different experiences for a lot of people. I can see YouTube videos with folks all day, mostly white, exerting their rights, you know, and they'll have titles, with that guy showed the law and this guy, you know, backed them down. And then you see black people do the same thing or brown people do the same thing. And next thing you know, they got a club upside their head, they're shot, and then and they're being charged. So how do we navigate that reality? Because one, it's kind of intimidating. And two, you know, the very real reality is like, you're not going to let me search you. Here's a bully club upside your head or in the back of your leg, and we're going to charge you with resisting, et cetera, et cetera. How do we kind of deal with that sort of thing? What, how do we protect ourselves with that reality of brutality in our faces?
Well, that right, reality you're describing.
Can I respond here, Eric? That's what Eric was mentioning about education, right? So that's why it's so important that everyone attends Know Your Rights workshops. I've been saying it from the beginning. The analogy is first aid. We all need first aid. And if you ever encounter a child choking or drowning and you've never taken that course, you're going to feel pretty bad about it. Same thing with Know Your Rights. If you are in a situation where you should have known, when you should have gone to one of those workshops, you know, and being trained or learned, or, you know, you don't have to go to a workshop, then read on it. But that's what makes the difference. So we are not saying that exercising your rights is going to guarantee that you don't get hit in the head or abused in any way. What we are saying is that you need to stay within the bounds of the law, because they get away with violating the law, but you don't. And so we teach techniques and strategies to make sure that we can document everything so that there's a recourse. So we're not telling people, tell them that you don't want to be searched. No, we are not teaching people that. We are telling people they do not have the right to search your home or your property. So taking your phone or looking at your purse or telling you to show your wallet or even patting you when you're in the car, you know, opening the glove compartment, they don't have the right to ask you for any of that without a judicial warrant. But you do not resist. You tell them, once you see that they're not going to respect the law, you or someone else that's with you needs to start recording, because we do have the right to record all this. We have the right to record any law enforcement interaction as long as we do so openly and we announce that we're doing it. And we do not interfere, okay? What are they gonna say? It's interfering. Sometimes, you know, we're gonna have to keep some physical distance so that they can say, I'm not interfering, I'm right here. But it's important to document everything so that that gives you some recourse later on. But we teach people not to resist at all. And, you know, if they're going to search you, you just have to allow them to search you and say, I do not consent to this search, right? And it needs to be on the record so that later on something can be done about that. So that's why it's so important to go, you know, to these trainings and learn as much as you can about, you know, how to exercise your rights and defend yourself. And also, you know, work as a group. Coordinate, you know, as witnesses. You know, you're seeing something happen. Someone should be calling the rapid response network. Someone should be recording. Someone should be talking to the person and trying to get their information so that we can locate them once they're detained, you know. Mm-hmm. So there's many things, you know, it's growing the solidarity amongst people so that we all can fight together and resist together. Sorry, Eric. Go for
it. Go ahead. But I agree with everything you say, Marissa. I think you said it well. But I think there's a bigger issue here, which you were pointing to with the question. And that is, I mean, when we get into a real totalitarian fascist type regime, there are no boundaries. Law doesn't exist. And I think it's been clear that's been the case for black and brown people for many, since the founding of this country, it's been the reality. I think what's different now is that more and more classes or types or categories, however you want to say it, of people are being pushed in the same direction. that we're witnessing a wholesale violation of rights and a use of violence against the general population, not just against segments of the population, which in itself is going to bring more solidarity about. I don't think the present regime is going to stop just at knocking down doors of black and brown people. I think it's going to be white people and others. I mean, we have ideologues in power who have a view of creating a Christian nationalist nation that is willing to say that more than half the people here, much more than half, are not welcome. And you know what? We're going to use violence if you stand up for your rights. And I don't know where that's going to go. It will be very ugly, but it will be very important that we have solidarity because we're all moving into the same boat, unfortunately. And, you know, again, recognizing who's been suffering this longer and what strategies have been developed, but we're all getting pushed there.
That's a sobering, you know, thought. How do people start to, what's the word I'm looking for? How do people really start to understand the various experiences that people have gone through, the ones that have lived through it, the ones that are just new to it? Are there some lines that should not be crossed, you know? For example, in the attempt to normalize things, in the attempt to just get things back to some sort of semblance that I'm used to continue my comfort, I might be willing to throw both of you all under the bus, you know, because it'll lead to me feeling more comfortable. So let's say, for example, us having this conversation on the air is somehow a violation, right? And they come to me. Well, then, you know, gosh, I just, you know, it was Eric and Marissa's fault, not mine. You have that type of attitude. Desperation breeds desperate actions, and people take, you know, some people just go along to get along. Let me stick my head in the sand and not say, you know, and just hope that it goes away. We have a lot of that going on. And to me personally, that becomes very dangerous because those folks who want to stick their head in the sand are quite willing to go along for a few trinkets of silver or a desire to have power. You know, let me belong. Let me be a whip holder. You know, let me be an enforcer. At least I'll be able to survive. I see that all the time with the capitulation of folks in media, that they are absolutely willing to sell us all down the river, tell lies and go along and get their paycheck and will literally tell you, hey man, I got mine, get yours. And so how do we start to really negotiate that?
Well, you talked about the worst coming out in people, but I think these times also bring out the best in people. And I think if we look back in history, we can see in huge numbers of average people taking a stand in their own small ways, but acting very courageously. I mean, let's hope that there are enough people that really have principle and are courageous enough to stand up in the face of very difficult challenges because, you know, they control. I mean, I think one factor that's got to be kept in mind is that this administration and these ideologues are never going to be satisfied. They're going to be keep going after more and more and more. And the people that accommodate are going to get screwed also. So the right. People realize that, you know, if you're not part of that really small elite that, you know, is in power, you're out of power and, you know, you're going to get screwed. So we got to make people understand that part as well.
Exactly.
Yeah, I always said that for people who like to collaborate, you know, so to speak, my understanding from what I've seen over the years, if you, Eric, you were using you as an example, tell me a secret about Marissa, you know, I'll take the information, but we now marked you down that never, ever trust Eric. Mm-hmm. Don't let him in the circle because look what he did with his own folks, right? And so that should be a tale of caution, that if you're willing to dime out folks, you know, that small cabal will use you, but they ain't letting you in. And that's something that, you know, we should think about. You're going to say something, Marissa?
Yes, I was, you know, I was going to say something about what you mentioned about people burying their head in the sand. Unfortunately, people deal with this issue the best they can. So that's why I think education is so key, so that we arm people with the right tools to resist and to defend themselves, right? And to unite, understand the strength of unity and the leverage that we can have in numbers. And so, again, you know, people burying their head in the sand is not always a character trait. It also has to do with your educational level and you know, knowledge. And so that's why it's so important to educate people politically and so that they can understand the effect that their actions can have if they, you know, make the right choices, right?
Right. So November 2nd will be the next Know Your Rights training, right?
Yes.
Give people the details and maybe give us an overview of what to expect when we get there.
You want to do that, Eric?
No, why don't you, Marissa? I'll just mention that. Oh, no, you go ahead, please.
Okay. So, yes, Friends of La Peña, Immigrant Rights Committee, puts together these monthly workshops. And let me just verify the time because I deal with many organizations. Let me go. Okay. So, yes, it's a Know Your Rights training for everybody. We have a capacity of 150 people. It's on November 2nd, 2 to 4 p.m. at La Peña Cultural Center. That's at 3105 Shattuck Avenue in Berkeley. And everybody's welcome. And like I said, it's a powerful experience to go and attend these workshops because you get to encounter people who are just as concerned as you about the situation and who are taking steps to do something about it. So in the end, it's a very useful event to attend. And also there's always opportunity to volunteer and do more about the situation. We are training people. Friends of La Peña Immigrant Rights Committee is training people in court watching also, which is, you know, one of the best things people can do right now if they want to make a difference for people, although sometimes it's really not feasible, right? I have not been involved in court watching because my side of things is training on all your rights. But yeah, it's a very good event to attend because you do get a lot out of it.
Let me add to that. It's on Know Your Rights. I mean, Know Your Rights has different aspects to it. First and foremost is what we've been discussing in terms of the constitutional rights. But, you know, we're looking at different fronts in terms of how we can protect those. So Marissa just mentioned the court watch. You know, we have been active in working with different groups to provide hundreds of volunteers to sit in on immigration court in Concord and in San Francisco. You know, we could just get into discussion about how much of a difference this makes, but it certainly keeps certain parties a little bit more honest in their dealing with immigrants. Another program that's been developed by a number of groups that we support is Adopt a Corner, where we go out to Home Depots and places where there are day laborers to make sure they're getting support, that people are watching out for their safety. We're also very involved in helping people process their asylum applications, because that's another way they can sort of try to deal with the repression that's coming down. So it's multifaceted, and there's plenty of room for people to volunteer in different ways to work to try to, you know, stop this oppression from happening. Again, no guarantees that it's going to work because, you know, we have a lawless administration in place, but, you know, everyone's going to make their effort.
Right. And it's basically,
I was going to ask, is there a difference between how somebody who is undocumented versus somebody who has a visa in terms of their rights? Because we're seeing people now, it's like, oh, you know, you said something online and it was politically against America. You critique capitalism. So let's take away your visa. Mm-hmm. Now you're a lawbreaker versus somebody who is undocumented versus somebody who may have, you know, some other, you know, green card or something. Are there levels to this in terms of your rights, or this kind of basic?
Theoretically, yes. Theoretically, someone who has citizenship or permanent residence is more stable, or it's harder to, you know, deport them. But that has gone out the window with this administration. As you well know, they've been detaining people with green cards. They've been detaining citizens, you know, that were protecting non-citizens, or people that were, you know, on the wrong side politically regarding Palestine, for example. So the repression is happening, and, you know, the different immigration statuses that we had, like different degrees of, you know, permanent, semi-permanent, right? Asylum is a semi-permanent status. Those are not being respected, really. And so what's really important, that what's happening in the neighborhoods, is that people are organizing and they're creating immigration defense committees and being able to, you know, get organized themselves and put together foot patrols and security teams and all sorts of strategies to protect themselves, you know, regarding the impending arrival of ICE to the Bay Area, right? So it's a difficult situation, but people are doing their best, and I think many allies and immigrants are being very, very active and growing the movement of resistance. Yes.
Look, when you have a situation where a government decides to bomb ships at sea just because they suspect there might be drug dealers, I mean, you got to understand who these people are and who, you know, what they're willing to do to anyone. And I think we do see, you know, more and more problems regarding immigrants that have all kinds of status. But I don't think we should forget the constant fear that undocumented people live in. I mean, I think it's a different mindset when, you know, you understand that if you're a student and you speak out, or you just converse and they happen to find out, that's one thing. It's different than being undocumented in a way that you're constantly at risk when you go to the store, when you go in your car. For any reason, they can stop you. And I think, you know, they use fear as one of their strongest tactics to try to silence the call.
Yeah.
Eric and Marissa, we appreciate you all taking time. We want to remind everybody from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock on November 2nd at La Peña Culture Center, you will have the next Know Your Rights training. Hopefully a lot of people are able to, you know, get educated, you know, and really know your rights, and then spread the good wisdom to others. Is there a website or something that they can tap into to get more information?
There are two websites. The Friends of La Peña immigrant rights website is FLPIR.org. And not only will you find information about the workshop, but we have all our activities listed there. There are multiple ways people can volunteer to be part of this movement to support immigrant rights and ultimately all our constitutional rights.
Well, there you have it.
East Bay Sanctuary. Marissa, why don't you give the website?
Yeah, the sanctuary. Although I must say that I'm here as an activist. I do work part-time for the East Bay Sanctuary Covenant, but, you know, I'm here on a personal note. But the East Bay Sanctuary Covenant website is East Bay Sanctuary altogether .org. And we do have a lot of information and useful resources listed on our Know Your Rights page. Yeah.
Okay, well, there you have it. We will be in touch. We're going to take a break here on Hard Knock Radio. We're out for now. Peace.
Due to unprecedented civil unrest, all forms of protest are now classified as acts of terrorism. This is not a test. This is not a test.
Coward, traitor, liar, foe, grab a tyrant by the toe. Fascist puppet show, line them up like dominoes. Never bow to a in a toupee, yelling free speech, but controlling what the news say. The Lorax called, it's time to find a new shape. RuPaul's never seen a beat that bad on Drag Race. Ain't it obvious the person in the office is a racist? Brad came in the mail, but he opposes immigration. And someone's apple leader, not a foreign armed invasion. That would be the mass man reading graduation ceremonies. Unmarked vans snatching people off the street. Broken Amendments 5, 10, and 14, at least. But please tell me again, oh, this is still democracy?
Repeat, this is not a test.
Coward, traitor, liar, foe. Grab a tyrant by the toe. Fascist puppet show. Line him up like dominoes. Coward, traitor, liar, foe. Grab a tyrant by the toe. Puppet show, line them up like dominoes. Please explain it to me. The man in charge of the economy's got six bankruptcies. Huh? Asking ChatGPT to define GDP, defund an education when half the country can't read. Well, now it's clicking for me. You need the people asleep, and knowledge is the greatest threat to propaganda machines. Remember, books don't burn, they just quietly vanish. So don't wait till it's too late to panic. Iceberg, Titanic, threat level orange. Don't you see that they're ignoring our rights? It's fascism wrapped in red, blue, and white. Coward, traitor, liar, foe. Grab a tyrant by the toe. Fascist puppet show. Line him up like dominoes. Coward, traitor, liar.
Me say me ready for the road. Put me upon the radio, me ready for the road. We no come for players, so me touch the stage show. Fire does a blaze, so them never they know. KBOO run the place. No, 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 yeah. Yeah, man, I'ma say this is the KBOO Full Strength Community Radio. And you know it's Kabaka Pyramid representing and Full Dawson. Baby Rock family, you don't know Kingston, Jamaica, we say. Yeah, Portland, it's not normal.
This is Bird Note. Skateboarder and birder Dave Mull remembers one of the first times his two passions intersected. He was practicing this terrifying trick he called the stump jump. Using this big tree stump,
an ollie over a grass gap onto a stump. And after the stump, there was about a 9-foot drop over a fence. So I had to get like just the right amount of speed. And it was scary to think if I didn't make the first jump onto the stump and if I just fell like face first down. That was like the biggest fear. While I was preparing to try the trick, Stellaris Jays were just going off, flying all around the area. And at one point, I thought I heard a red-tailed hawk. And I looked around and was like, I don't see it anywhere. And I looked up on a branch, like high up in a cedar, and it was totally the Stellar's Jay mimicking a red-tailed hawk. These Stellar's Jays were like pretending to be something they were not, kind of tricking the world. So it got me in this mindset that I could be something I was not.
With that newfound confidence, Dave got his running start. And nailed the trick.
From that point on, every time I see Stellar's Jays, I'm reminded of one of the scariest and happiest moments of my skateboard career so far. So, thanks, Stellar's Jays.
For Bird Note, I'm Mark Bramhill.
Maryland.
Do you like discovering new music and reconnecting with some older but perhaps forgotten favorites? Then look no further. Tune into The Listening Room with host Timothy P.